This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, September 1st. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. You can buy just about everything online these days. Clothes, furniture, groceries, even a house. The market for virtual home buying has soared during the pandemic, and it's bringing with it a host of companies using tech and data to flip houses. On today's show, our Heard on the Street tech columnist Laura Forman joins us to discuss why it's taken so long for real estate tech to take off, and how these companies are looking to use pandemic-driven home buying demand to cement their place in the market. That's after these headlines. A new bill that's set to become law in South Korea could put a dent in Google and Apple's dominance over in-app purchases. Right now, app developers who sell through the tech giants' app stores are required to use the company's in-house payment systems, which give Google and Apple a cut of up to 30% of the sale. But a bill passed yesterday by South Korea's parliament would change that by allowing app makers to use other options for getting payments. It would be the first such law in the world, though similar measures have been proposed in the U.S. and Europe. Apple and Google have defended requiring the use of their payment systems. Apple says using other systems could increase the risk of fraud and privacy violations. Google says the commissions help keep its Android operating system free. The New York Times is putting its popular product review site Wirecutter behind a paywall. Starting Wednesday, readers can pay $5 a month or $40 a year for access. Those who subscribe to the Times' premium service or pay for home delivery will also receive full access. It's part of the company's effort to increase digital subscription revenue. Here's our reporter, Patience Hagen, with more.
It's part of a trend where media companies are trying to really diversify their revenue away from advertising and get people to purchase digital subscriptions. They're finding that subscription revenue can be a lot more reliable and a lot more lucrative. Part of their strategy is to really look for those niches that where people need content, and they're niches that newspapers in print actually used to serve. For instance, look at what New York Times has done with the NYT cooking subscription. In the past, traditional newspapers used to be a place where people found recipes. They've brought that back, and they've created a product that people are willing to pay for. With Wirecutter, they have a very popular site for product reviews, and they figured that's another product that people will be willing to pay for.
And shares of Zoom fell nearly 17% on Wednesday as investors worried about slowing demand for video conferencing services. Zoom said revenue for the last quarter surpassed $1 billion for the first time in the company's history. But as in-person activities resume and offices reopen, demand for Zoom's service is slowing. The company said some metrics, which have been supercharged by the pandemic, were starting to normalize as customers returned to what it called more thoughtful, measured buying patterns. All right, coming up, buying or selling a home isn't quite like buying a pair of shoes online. Or is it? We'll discuss why virtual home flipping is taking off after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
Home prices are rising at a record rate. A lot of the demand is coming from city dwellers who want to escape to the country or the suburbs. But some of the buyers aren't people at all. They're tech companies, sometimes called iBuyers, that buy and sell homes for profit. These companies have been building up their presence in the real estate market for years. But this may be the moment they've been waiting for. So after years of resistance, is tech finally taking over real estate? Joining us to discuss is our Heard on the Street tech columnist, Laura Forman. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, I think the term iBuyer gets bounced around a little bit when we're talking about this market. Can you start by telling us what that is?
Sure. An iBuyer is a company that uses computerized data to buy and sell homes and flip them. So a company that will ask you, a homeowner, for information about your house, decide it's worth X amount of money, buy it from you, fix it up, just as a home flipper does in real life. In other words, you know, they put nice hardwood floors in, or they'll tear out the carpet and put a new carpet. They'll paint, simple renovations like that. And then they'll turn around and sell it in a very short time period and hope to make a profit on that.
And who are the big iBuyers in the market right now?
So the market leader is a company called Opendoor, and they are very much in the market lead. Zillow, which almost every consumer who's ever wanted to buy or bought a house has looked at, has gone big into iBuying. OfferPad, and then also Redfin, which again, if you've been in the market for a home or look to sell your home, you've used Redfin before, and they are also involved in iBuying.
All right, I want to talk about the technology that's being used by these firms. Some listeners will be familiar with, you know, virtual open houses or maybe digital staging, but the technology that these firms are using, it's a little bit different. It goes beyond that, right?
Right. So they're using all of those things that we as consumers are familiar with, but they're also building a tremendous data repository where basically the more markets they're in and the more transactions they're a part of and they see, the more data they get. And the more they're able to predict how much to buy and sell a home for without needing to use a physical agent on the ground.
So if I'm looking to sell my house to them, what might I need to send in? What kind of information are they going to need from the home sellers?
So initially it was that you'd go online and you'd fill out some paperwork, which would have some questions about your home. And then they would get back to you with kind of like a preliminary quote. Then they would physically send an agent to check out the house and kind of make sure that everything checked out. It was as it was described. That, with technology, transitioned into like a virtual live walkthrough, like, you know, you might do a FaceTime with an agent. As of last week, I believe, Opendoor is now offering consumers the ability to essentially walk through their house, take a few snapshots of things and some videos on their own time, and send them in. And they're saying that the whole process takes about 10 minutes. So imagine just, you know, trying to sell a dress, taking a selfie of yourself online and wanting to sell it on eBay or Poshmark. Like, you can essentially now sell your multi-$100,000 house that way.
And I guess, you know, the idea of buying everything or selling everything online seems pretty common to us now. But you've reported in the past that tech real estate firms, you know, for home flipping, they were met with some skepticism. Why was that?
I think when you think about automating an industry that hasn't been automated in decades, there's challenges there. When you think about what Netflix did with, you know, movies, you know, we used to go to Blockbuster and then suddenly you could order movies online. That's an easy transition to make because a movie costs, you know, what, $5 to rent or whatever it was. But a home is someone's most valuable possession. And so to put that in the hands of a company that isn't even seeing your home was met with a lot of skepticism.
Right. You mentioned the transition that's happened in other industries. I mean, we've seen Amazon become dominant in retail, Uber and Lyft taking over in the taxi space. How much of the market do these tech real estate firms have? And how much are they really likely to ever have?
So the U.S. residential real estate market is like a $2 trillion market, nearly. It's massive. And as of now, iBuyers only have 1% market share. So there is an incredibly huge runway.
What does that mean for competition amongst the firms in this space?
The firms will tell you that they see the traditional agent buying and selling model, you know, working with a physical agent on the ground, as their main competition. But also, they are racing against one another. Because if you look at, you know, food delivery is a great example. That's an industry where there are multiple players offering essentially the same service. You're probably going to use the brand that you've heard of, that your parents use, that your friends use. There's some loyalty there. And I think that's the case with iBuying as well. So these companies are working to enhance their technology such that they can eliminate people on the ground, such that they can get into as many cities as possible, as quickly as possible, so that when there is that consumer adoption, there is that need, they're the name people think of first.
And then, you know, the housing market was pretty hot. It's been pretty hot for the last, you know, more than a year as people are looking for bigger places during the pandemic. But what does it mean as these markets cool down? How are the firms going to move forward?
So the biggest problem these iBuyers have had is that they have been historically losing money. So they're, you know, buying these massive pieces of inventory that they're carrying on their balance sheet, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars per house. And then they're fixing them up. And between that and the sales and marketing costs to acquire consumers and the engineers they need to build these data repositories, they're losing money. Having said that, in recent months, the market has appreciated so much and so quickly that they've actually made money. But it's just something that's not going to last. The iBuyers will tell you themselves that they don't expect to make much of a profit on the homes themselves. They're hoping that by getting consumers to come into their funnel with intent, in other words, they're basically using iBuying as a customer acquisition tool to come into their platform, share data, which they can use to build up their repositories, and then hopefully provide other services for them that have higher margins, things like title and escrow and mortgages.
Sounds like a traditional tech approach, you know, low profit, lots of data.
I kind of joke in the column, you know, what's the return policy on a home? You can, you know, sell something on eBay, shoes, for example, or buy them, and it's very easy and seamless and virtual. But if you've made a mistake because it's been misrepresented, it's easy to return. You know, it's easy to take that back. With a home, you know, there is no return policy.
All right. That's our Heard on the Street tech columnist, Laura Foreman. Thanks, Laura.
Thanks so much.
And that's it for today's tech news briefing. You can always find more tech stories on our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.